Hello, I'm Isaiah Queer. It's Wednesday, November 26, 2025. Welcome to another episode of the Isaiah Queer Podcast. On today's show, I'm going to be reading the prologue to Ellen Johnson's Relief 2009 memoir, This Child Will Be Great, Remarkable Life of Africa's First Woman President. In my humble review, this is one of the best memoirs ever written by an African leader, past or present. And I think there should be a sequel to this book, especially about her second term in office. On a side note, President Sirleaf is 87 and lives in Monroeville, Liberia. Let's dive into the prologue. To all the people of Liberia, who have suffered so much and now look forward to reclaiming the future. And in memory of my mother, Martha Cecilia Johnson, who instilled in us the value of hard work, honesty, and humility. This Child Will Be Great, Memoir of a Remarkable Life by Africa's First Woman President, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Prologue. If asked to describe my homeland in a sentence, I might say something like this. Liberia is a wonderful, beautiful mixed-up country struggling mightily to find itself. Given more space, however, I will certainly elaborate. Liberia is some 43,000 square miles of lush whale waterland on the bush of West Africa, a country slightly larger than the state of Ohio, a Lilliputian nation with a giant history. It has a population of 3.5 million people from some 16 ethnic groups speaking some 16 indigenous languages plus English. It has never known hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, droughts, or other natural disasters, only the occasional flood and the more frequent havoc wreaked by men. Liberia is complicated. To paraphrase Winston Churchill, Liberia is a conundrum wrapped in complexity and stuffed inside a paradox. Then again, it was born that way. The first inhabitants of the region now known as Liberia may have been Jena, a Pygmies according to the Liberian historian Abiyomi Kanga. Soon came the Gola, whom many historians believe to be the first traveling settlers of the land. Gola legend has it that the tribe left Central Africa and moved toward the coast in search of land. Ruthless fighters, they went through and not around the traps in their path. According to the book Notes from the New Liberia, a historical political survey, the Gola and the Kisi belong to the Mel, West Alante ethno-linguistic group. The Mende linguistic group, made up of Mandingo, the Va, one of only a few African tribes to have developed a strip. The Bandi, the Pele, the Lama, who also are a strip, the Mende, the Gio, and the Manan peoples, is believed to have entered the area from the Northern savannas in the 15th century. The third major group, the Kwa linguistic group, includes the Basa, Dei, Gribu, Kru, Bele, Kran and Bui peoples, for mostly in the southern and eastern parts of Liberia. All of these groups were living in the land when the final group of settlers began to arrive. These were the American Liberians. As early as the 1700s, the idea of sending new world slaves back to Africa rose in the hearts and minds of British abolitionists who saw in the establishment of the colony for former slaves a means of ending the slave trade and eventually slavery itself. During the American Revolutionary War, African slaves in the American colonies were promised freedom if they sided with the British. Many did, fighting valiantly. When the war ended, several hundred of these fighters gathered their families and fled the country with the departing British troops. After some wandering, they were settled with British backing along the coast of West Africa in what is now the country of Sierra Leone. Although most of those first early settlers perished of malaria and yellow fever, subsequent attempts at settlement took firmer hold. The first of these was established in 1792. The settlers called their new city Freetown. Meanwhile, a similar conversation was taking place across the pond in the newly born United States of America. Paul Coffey was the freeborn son of a former slave father and a Native American mother. A prominent Quaker, Coffey became a sailor and successful ship owner who opened the first integrated school in Massachusetts and later began advocating to set free slaves in Africa. In 1816, at his own expense, but with the backing of the British government and some members of the U.S. Congress, Captain Coffey took 38 American blacks to Freetown and settled them there. He intended to make this voyage an annual affair, but his untimely death in 1817 put an end to the plans. Still, Coffey had reached a large audience with his pro-colonization arguments. Not all supporters of the idea, however, had arrived at their destination from the starting point. Some abolitionists took up the cry as part of their attack on slavery, while some religious adherents thought the idea an excellent means of spreading Christianity to the Dark Continent. Some white Americans, considering themselves pragmatists, thought black people would simply be happier and far better in Africa, where they could live free of the racial discrimination that gripped America. Others simply wanted to rid the new country of all black people as soon as possible. In this last group stood the statesman Thomas Jefferson. Writing his 1781 notes from the state of Virginia, Jefferson advocated gradually emancipating all slaves and shipping them to Africa, along with free blacks and possibly those of mixed heritage. Jefferson, an author of the American Declaration of Independence and its famous stirring words, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights," was, of course, a slave owner himself. He considered black people inferior to whites and warned that their continuing presence was a threat to the young nation he had helped to found. They could not simply be free and allowed to remain in the United States, Jefferson warned. They had to go. Among the Romans, emancipation required but one effort. He wrote, "The slave, when made free, might mix without staining the blood of his master. But with us a second is necessary, unknown to history. When free, he is to be removed beyond the reach of mixture." This, then, was the backdrop against which the American Colonization Society was founded in 1816 in Washington, D.C. Among the founders were many prominent early American leaders, including Daniel Webster, Francis Scott Key, Henry Clay, and Booker Washington, an associate justice of the Supreme Court and the nephew of George Washington himself, and after whom Booker Island in Monroeville's name. The society began raising funds to establish a colony in Africa. 4 years later, and in January of 1820, the ship Elizabeth set sail for New York. On board were 86 free American blacks from New York, Philadelphia, Washington, and Virginia, more than half of them women and children, along with three agents of the ACS. It took 6 weeks to cross the Atlantic, and the illegal immigrants landed first on Sherbro Island off the coast of present-day Sierra Leone, intending to use the spot as a stopping ground while they searched for permanent accommodations on the nearby mainland. But disease and fever laid waste to much of the group. By May 1820, all three agents and nearly a quarter of the would-be settlers were dead. Those who survived fled to Freetown to recover and repair. A year later, the society sent a new agent, Dr. Eli Aries, to explore the coast and negotiate with local dead and Bassa chiefs for suitable land for a settlement. Under the direction of President James Monroe, Dr. Aries enlisted the help of Lieutenant Robert Stockton, captain of the USS Alligator, a naval ship patrolling the West African coastline in cooperation with His Majesty's Navy's slave trading blockade. Together, Aries and Stockton set their sights on a slip of land 200 or so miles south of Freetown, known as Cape Monserrato or Miserrado. Agents of the ACS had previously tried to buy this very land, but the local Bassa chief, King Peter, had declined to sell. This time, however, Stockton declined to take no for an answer. When King Peter again seemed reluctant to sell, Stockton persuaded him with a pistol to the head. Thus, in December 1821, the ACS gained a toehold in Africa in exchange for some $300 worth of goods, including muskets, gunpowder, nails, beads, tobacco, shoes, soap, and rum. Stockton also promised that new immigrants would not interfere with the thriving local slave trade. Soon afterward, the surviving settlers from the Elizabeth, replenished by a fresh ship full of immigrants, took possession of the land. They gave thanks, dubbing their new home Providence Island, and then moved immediately to secure the adjacent mainland. There, the first permanent settlement, originally called Christopolis, was carved from the thick forest. In 1824, the settlement's name was changed to Monrovia, in honor of U.S. President ACS member James Monroe, and the colony as a whole began the Commonwealth of Liberia. But the colony, being neither a sovereign nation nor a bona fide colony of a sovereign government, the United States refused to formally designate it as such, faced ever-increasing political threats from foreign governments, especially Britain. So on July 26, 1847, the country declared independence in a document that referenced the oppression of African Americans in the United States and stated that such persons were being driven to make new lives for themselves in Africa. And so Liberia was born. Britain was one of the first governments to recognize the new nation. The United States did not recognize Liberia until the American Civil War. Nonetheless, that initial settler group and those who followed came to call themselves American Liberians. It was an appropriate name, for this band of hopeful immigrants was far more American than African and intended to remain that way. They had adopted the cultures, traditions, and habits of the land of their birth, and these they brought with them when they came. The colonists spoke English and retained the dress, manners, housing, and religion of the American South. They created symbols for this new nation that reflected, to a sometimes startling degree, the American identity and immigrant sensibility. The Liberian flag mimics so closely the American flag that it is easy to mistake it for the latter. The only difference is the number of stars and stripes. The Liberian seal features not only a palm tree representing our vast natural resources, but a sailing ship to represent the settlers who came from across the seas. The Liberian motto is the love of liberty brought us here. Several passages of our original Declaration of Independence might sound familiar to American ears. We, the people of the Commonwealth of Liberia and in Africa, acknowledging with devout gratitude the goodness of God, do in order to secure these blessings for ourselves and our posterity, and to establish justice, ensure domestic peace, and promote the general welfare, hereby solemnly associate and constitute ourselves a free, sovereign, and independent state by the name of the Republic of Liberia, and do ordain and establish this constitution for the government of the same. The settlers of modern-day Liberia decided they would plant their feet in Africa, but keep their faces turned squarely toward the United States. This stance would trigger a profound alienation between themselves and the indigenous peoples upon whose shores they had arrived, among whom they would build their new home. Alienation would lead to disunity. Disunity would lead to a deeply cleaved society. That cleavage who set the stage for all the terror and bloodshed to come.